And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In 1979, 11 people were killed in a crowd of concertgoers at what was then known as Riverfront Coliseum. The tragic events changed the way large crowds gathered across the country. WCPO will air a new documentary this week about the 1979 concert by The Who, a production that features members of that band.
And then that dreadful night, that December the 3rd in Cincinnati, was like, ugh. It was like, I can't tell you, it was like being just hit with a bat.
We ran away is what we did. I'm sorry, but that's what happened. We ran away.
What if there were no festival seating? We wouldn't have lost those 11 youngsters. What if it wasn't us and it was another band?
I literally seen people being pushed up in the air and walking on people into the door and a guy grabbing on the awning before the door and swinging himself into the building.
Yeah, it boiled down to two things. That was trying to keep room around my body, around my lungs, because if I would have let go, I was feeling it leaving me.
And I saw them carrying a kid out of the front, and I said, those are Steven's shoes.
And those are just some of the comments from people directly involved in that 1979 tragedy in the new WCPO documentary, The Who, The Night That Changed Rock. And here to talk about it is WCPO news anchor Tanya O'Rourke. Tanya, thanks for being with us.
Michael, thanks so much for having us.
And we also have with us Fred Wittenbaum. He's a friend and classmate of some of those who died, and he helped found the PEM Memorial Scholarship Fund, an historical marker built at Riverfront Plaza outside what is now Heritage Bank Arena to welcome those, or to remember those who died. Fred, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. But we're at Finneytown High School.
Yeah, the marker that's at the Coliseum is a little bit different. It was created by a bunch of other folks, really well intentioned, who wanted to mark that historical site. But the PEM Memorial, the PEM Memorial, is at my high school, Fred's high school, Finneytown, which had lost three people that day.
Okay, well, I appreciate the correction and apologize for that as well. So thank you for letting us know. And but there is a memorial at both the arena.
Yes.
And you've got something that you've worked on at Finneytown High School.
Yes, absolutely.
And remind us before we get into the documentary, the connection to Finneytown High School.
Well, on December 3rd, 1979, we lost 11 kids outside the Coliseum. Three of the 11 kids were from Finneytown High School, a very disproportionate amount, considering our entire high school was maybe 450 kids. So flash forward 30 some odd years later, and two of the alumni from Finneytown, John Hutchins, class of 1980, Steve Bentz, class of 1980, got together, decided it would be a good idea and a long overdue idea to do some kind of a permanent memorial at the high school on behalf of the three kids. Stephen Preston, Jackie Eckerly, Karen Morrison, that's the PEM, first letters of their last names. They got together, created a memorial bench, which was going to go outside the Performing Arts Center at the high school. I got involved right after that with Walt Medlock, and Walt's class of 1979, I'm class of 1983, and we expanded it from just a bench into a living memorial, a living tribute of scholarship, three scholarships, one for each of our lost friends each year. We've done 9 years, 27 scholarships. This will be our 28th, 29th, and 30th this year on the 10th anniversary of our organization.
Okay, and the number to join our conversation is 513-419-7100. You can email your comments or your recollections of that day to talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and tweets and questions and try to get some of those into the show as well. Tanya, as part of this documentary that WCPO created, The Who, The Night That Changed Rock, you sat down with people in the band closely associated with the band, The Who. Give us the background on that and how you were able to get that set up.
Well, props to Fred, really, because if I can backtrack just a little bit, having grown up in Finneytown, and it was a momentous night for me as well and my family. My brother was supposed to go. He was grounded, so he didn't get to go. I watched it and thought that I want to be a journalist. I watched the news coverage, and that's when I decided that. So for me, a big day. When I ran into Fred about a year ago, he was talking about the PEM that year, and he mentioned offhandedly next year's the 40th year. So flash forward to maybe June, July, and I'm thinking, it just kept sticking with me. We got to do something to mark this 40 years. So I reached out to Fred again and said, hey, do you know, we want to do something. Could you meet with us? He came in. He had names, numbers, and said, Here's who you need to talk to. I've reached out to all of them. They'll talk to you because I reached out to them and you're from Finneytown and you're a local girl. They get it. They don't want to talk, but they're going to talk because of this and they feel they need to. And then he said, and I'll reach out to the who, which we sort of kind of giggled a little. And I went, okay, sure. And lo and behold, because he had been created and fostered a relationship with them, because he spoke on my behalf and said, we trust this girl. She's one of us. And because the band, specifically Bill Kerbishley, he's their manager for 49 years now. He's the key holder to these guys, the gatekeeper. And when he says we're doing something, we're doing something. And I think he knew that the band was ready and he was ready. They needed to find some closure. They need to heal. This has been a long, arduous 40 years in some ways for them, too. Just, they carry this with them all the time. So thanks to Fred and thanks to the relationship he had fostered. Thanks for saying that I was credible. They said, sure. And so we all flew out to Seattle and they gave us about 3 hours of their time. And we sat down. We talked to Roger, then Pete, then Bill. And each one of them, I've said it before to other people, it's like they filleted themselves open and laid themselves on the table for us.
And they had initially taken some heavy criticism in the early reaction.
Sure, because everyone needs to blame somebody, right? And so you say, well, the band caused this. The band didn't even know what was going on. They were inside playing Bill Kerbishley.
Yes, and I want to bring that up because you referenced Bill Kerbishley, who was the manager
at that
then
time,
as well.
Yeah.
And he was the one who decided that, because I don't know if a lot of people realize this when you reference this concert tragedy, that the tragic deaths happened before the show started.
And not even in, they didn't even get into the Coliseum.
Right. And so there was an option to inform the band of what had happened, but Bill Kerbishley decided not to. And we have some sound from him, sure, from your documentary. Let's listen.
It's difficult. You know, you make a decision like that, you're always going to be second-guessed or someone's going to say, what if? But, you know, there are no what ifs. What if there were no festival seating? We wouldn't have lost those 11 youngsters. What if it wasn't us and it was another band, which it quite easily could have been? I still don't have adequate words to explain the feeling and the emotion I had there, you know, to be surrounded by all of that and to see it. And, you know, it was difficult, very difficult.
And so the band played on and did not know what had happened. And I imagine that that's true for most of the concert goers who were there as well.
Yeah, I think the people we even spoke to, we couldn't include all of it, but we have, they were saying, you know, they were waiting for their friend, Stephen, in this case. He didn't show up. They waited an hour. They were annoyed with him. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't know anything had happened. They knew that there was a skirmish outside or that there was trouble afoot, but they didn't know how bad. They're kids. They get in their car, they turn on the radio, WEBN is saying, if you were at that concert, pull over, call your parents. That's the first time they have like a real inkling something bad happened. They get home, their friend still isn't there. You know, it becomes a situation where the next day, it was a school night. And a school night, 15-year-old kids are at a rock and roll concert. I can't envision that. And that's because of this concert. Because of what happened that night, No 50-year-old kids are going to concerts, you know what I mean, like that, and by themselves with just friends. But they went to this concert, and they expected, of course, to come home. Their parents expected them to come home. But most of these people didn't even know. Some of them showed up the next day for school and were told when they got to school. And to Fred, back me up on this, they didn't know. They didn't bring in outside counselors and grief counselors. These kids had to just live with this and deal with it in the best way they could. Is that true?
Pretty much so. It's the school was somewhat like a morgue. You really weren't allowed to talk about it, and you didn't know what to do. You didn't know what to say. You didn't know how to deal. And what had occurred is for 30 plus years in our school district, everyone kept it in. And when we had our first memorial, it gave people an opportunity to come together, share some love, feel a lot of trust, and let it release a little bit.
I'm certainly not trying to make light of this, but just before we came on, I watched a full episode of WKRP in Cincinnati that they aired a few weeks after this tragedy. Yep. Of course, this is fiction and frankly a comedy, but they did a pretty dramatic episode that was inspired by the events that had happened just not too long prior to the airing. And it showed me how slowly news traveled 40 years ago, because even the owner of the radio station who attended the fictional concert came in the next morning so excited to have had so much fun at the concert and did not know what had happened.
And they felt bad because they'd been promoting it so heavily.
Right.
Which when you talk to some folks in radio around here, they felt that way too. You know, they were giving away tickets and they were so pumping this up because the Who was the biggest band in rock and roll at that time. And they hadn't played here. So there was so much pent up energy to see them. And you're right. News traveled so much slower then. Today, this wouldn't have happened. I mean, we would have had cell phone video for miles
instantly,
on this.
For sure. Yeah. Let's take a phone call now. We'll go to the phone lines. We have John on the line. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Comment is I was there in 1979, and I got there fairly early, so I was fairly far forward in the area leading to the doors that they eventually opened. And just as background, I have been a vendor and worked other ways at concerts over the years, so I have attended somewhere between 500 and 1,000 concerts all over the country, okay, both large and small, but up to several hundred thousand people, so up to the biggest. And it's my contention, after all that experience, is the same as I felt the day that it happened, which is that the promoters or whoever handled the venue created a bottleneck and did not open doors when they needed to. They did not understand crowds. And honestly, I always thought that they should have been charged with manslaughter.
John, we appreciate the perspective very much. Thanks so much for calling and sharing that. The events of that night in December 1979 did impact the way concerts were handled here in Cincinnati and other places.
Do you know how much it cost to go to a concert that night?
No.
As a festival seating ticket?
No.
$10.
Is that expensive in $79?
Nope. I don't think so.
Not at all.
But now we all have seats. And yeah, we pay a lot of money to be right up front and close. Security became a lot better after this. But you don't go... It's festival seating is coming back. They call it general admission. When you go to Riverbend, you're sitting in the lawn. That's festival seating. But it's different now. They're managing the crowds better now. This all because of that terrible night. And, you know, we don't assess blame in this documentary. We really don't. We do what we wanted to do. And when we talked to Fred about this, we gave him a pledge. We wanted to let these people tell their stories. And it's not shocking to me at all that someone like John, was it John, that called in? Everyone has a story. This is part of the fabric of Cincinnati. This is a Cincinnati story, but it's not just a Cincinnati story. It's a rock and roll story. It's a national story because it changed everything. But if you talk to someone, you say, oh, we're talking about the, you know, the incident that occurred outside the Coliseum that night with the Who played, they'll go, oh, gosh, my cousin was there, or my uncle, my dad was there. You know, it's just all in our pores. And I think hopefully that this documentary will serve to maybe allow some healing and some we're going to get it out there. And we hope that it will. We try to end on a high note. I think we do. It is gripping. It is difficult and sometimes to watch it. The firsthand accounts are intense. And Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend talk very, very openly. Fred was sitting in the room when they talked. He knows. Bill Kerbishley talks very, very candidly about how this enveloped him throughout his life. And but I think at the end of the day, people will walk away and go, okay, this is going to be okay.
We're talking about the new WCPO documentary, The Who, The Night That Changed Rock. We're joined by WCPO news anchor Tanya O'Rourke. And we also have with us Fred Wittenbaum. He's a friend and classmate of some of those who died in this concert back in 1979 and helped found the Penn Memorial Scholarship Fund. Tanya, as you referenced, you did get to speak to Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey. And we have some sound from Pete Townsend that I'd like to hear.
We ran away is what we did. I'm sorry, but that's what happened. We ran away. You know, we had an excuse because we had another gig. But, you know, I remember when Roger said, this is for the kids of Cincinnati. You know, I just think, we're in the wrong city. We're in Buffalo. I know what he meant, but I just thought it was dumb. We shouldn't have been performing at all. Not his fault, but you know what I mean. I love Roger. You know, just that was his response. And mine was probably just to drink another bottle of brandy. So not much better. We should have stayed.
Tanya, while you were talking to Pete Townsend, What did you get, or did you get a sense of how he seemed to feel?
So Pete admitted to us that night, and it's in the documentary, this was the longest conversation he had ever had about this in 40 years.
With you, the conversation with you?
Yeah. So I think Roger and Bill have talked to each other more. They've been more candid with each other. Roger came to Finneytown a year ago, no media at all, met with the family, and we cover that in the documentary. Fred provided us video of that. But, you know, for Pete, he's never released that. And what I got from him was that this has affected him more than he even probably wants to admit. I asked him at one point how it manifested in his life. And he very clearly says, I quit the band. I mean, a couple years later, he quit the band and left rock and roll entirely for a while. And he correlates it directly to that. Keep in mind, they'd also just lost their drummer, Keith Moon, about, a year before that.
Just about a year.
They talk about how they were a wounded animal at that time. They were going back on tour because they were living this rock and roll life. And, you know, Pete was he's very candid about how he was immersed in a lot of drinking. And at that time he was, I just found that he was quite open, maybe more open than he even expected he would be at that time. I feel like he wanted to get it out,
We have a clip from Roger Daltrey as well. Let's hear that.
And then that dreadful night, that December the 3rd in Cincinnati, was like, ugh. It was like, I can't tell you, it was like being just hit with a bat, like coming off stage, and you think you've done a wonderful show. And it was a great show. It was one of the best shows we played on the whole tour. The crowd were incredible. And then we were told what had happened before the show had started. And that was like being whacked with a baseball bat. And I think we did the rest of the tour without really talking to hardly anybody, in total silence. We hardly spoke to each other. We never spoke on stage. We just played our music.
Fred, we're hearing some reflection from members of the band, but take us back to that period. You knew a lot of the people who went to this concert, so you knew fans of The Who. Did that relationship between fan and artist sour at all in that period?
No, the Who, our school was very musical and artistic, just as a general rule. Everyone was into music or the arts.
And we're talking about Finneytown High School, to remind everyone.
Yes. So The Who, being the biggest band in the world, spoke directly to the way it was, the way things were, what the words of their music, what they said reverberated amongst the kids in the school. So we had a very disproportionate number of people probably down at the Coliseum that night. It just isn't like it is today. It wasn't then. And when it happened, it was the worst possible thing that could happen, because if you have no release, if you have no way of joining together to not heal but to at least try and make yourself feel somewhat better, you just are alone.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. We have Tracy on the line. Hi, Tracy. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I called in to describe my experience at the Who concert, but really I feel very strongly that I could have been one of the kids killed at the Who concert if it weren't for a prior experience at a Jethro Tull concert there at the Coliseum. And it was, general admission seating, and we were hanging around a long time in the afternoon. And when it looked like they were about to open the doors, I'm 5'1", and people started pressing close to try to get in, first, and people's shoulders and backs started just getting pressed against my face. And then my friend, who's much taller than me, his elbow was like sticking into my throat. And I was telling myself, I was like, I was dying. And then a young a girl who we had been chatting with before, I'll never forget, she had a British accent, and she said, she's choking, help her. And the people just kind of pushed me up, and I popped up with my legs, feet off the ground, and I just was carried in by the press of the bodies. And so I spent that whole concert fearing that there would be a fire or something. And so then when the Who came to town, my favorite band and everything, and many of my friends, you know, was our favorite. And I convinced my friend Kathy, who's also short, to stand up on the cement sort of planters, the round, they had big round things with little bushes on the inside, and they were about 3 feet high. So we stepped up and stood on them and waited until she promised me she'd wait even if the music started, until everybody was in. So while we were there, some of our friends who had tried to get in, they would come back to us, and one of our friends, the sleeve of his winter coat had been ripped all the way off, and another friend lost his glasses, and they just kind of kept trying to get in, and then they'd come back to us, and so then we finally went in, and it was such a wonderful show, and then we all took the bus home and to a friend's house where we were staying together, and turned on the television and heard about it. And I called my father, and he was in a panic. I'll just never forget it. Wow. I get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Tracy, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Tracy.
Sharing that story.
Her story is not unusual.
Well, that's another example of, you know, someone who went and ended up enjoying the show without really knowing what had happened.
Well, but not even that. So she talked about the Jethro Tull concert beforehand. This almost feels like, and again, we don't assess blame, but there were multiple concerts leading up to that one at Riverfront Coliseum that people tell that story like they were at an Elton John concert and waiting to get in, and they had to hold their arms together so that their sisters could breathe because they were being crushed because of the crowd, because of this festival seating. And I think it seems to me, my opinion only, and is that this was a terrible, unfortunate series of events that all culminated on one night that just happened to be the night that the Who tragedy occurred. It was cold. It was December 3rd. They were so excited to be there. There were 12,000, they estimate 12,000 people by 6 o'clock at night standing on the plaza level trying to get in. And they only opened a few doors. And so, you know, and they heard something going on inside. I want to mention, we have, of course, the documentary that airs tomorrow Tuesday at 8 o'clock on Channel 9. But we also have another version of it, which is way more like doc in style, like traditional documentary that'll be released on the 4th that goes into a little more detail, can breathe a little bit more because there's no time limit. And then we have a podcast that's a companion podcast that's going to drop too. And we really do get into the heart of, like, those folks who were struggling so much to breathe, and that this was, it just unfortunately felt like, you know, it was going to happen. Unfortunately, it just happened that night.
To our callers on the line, stay on the line. We'll get you possibly in the next segment where we'll have another guest talking about that fateful night. WCPO's The Who, The Night That Changed Rock, airs Tuesday night, December 3rd, 8 p.m. on WCPO Channel 9. Our thanks to WCPO News anchor Tanya O'Rourke for being with us, and
Fred
Wittenbaum from Finneytown as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And a programming note for our listeners, WVXU's Lee Hay produced a documentary commemorating the 30th anniversary of the Who concert tragedy 10 years ago. We will air that award-winning documentary in its entirety Tuesday night at 7 on 91.7. So start your evening at 7 o'clock on 91.7 and then flip over to Channel 9 for the video documentary as well. So thanks. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Marks.